Welcome back to Hitch Route. It's been a doozy of an offseason, guys. And we already had our draft recap, but we definitely have a lot to cover with the rest of the season. So we're just going to do a quick debrief as the season's coming up just in a few weeks now. I'm joined by Rob, and this is Alex.
Alex, it's great to be back. What an offseason it's been. Not sure I can remember another offseason that was as exciting as this one. And as such, I'm not sure I can remember a time when I was as excited for the season to begin as I am for this one to begin. Summer is great. We all love summer. But I think we can all agree that it's really great to, you know, have football almost be back here in just another couple of weeks.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I hate summer. Like, summer is my least favorite season. I'm just going to be straight up with it.
This is a sign that you need help, right? Like,
really?
If you're hating on summer and it is your least favorite time of year, like, winter I could understand, but summer, really?
Winter is my favorite season.
Not
my favorite season, but winter is okay. So it's probably not better. I'm saying it in jest, but I do not like the heat bearing down on me, and that is mostly happening in summer relative to the other seasons.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I can get behind that. It's just the way you put it previously. I was like, does he need to talk to somebody?
If I see sunlight, I shrivel up. I'm either a vampire or I'm just clinically depressed.
Well, that would explain why you have, you know, lived for so long. So
yes, man, I'm already so old at 23. It just is something.
I know. I mean, at this rate, you're on the path to immortality. It's honestly truly remarkable.
Thank you. But yeah. So let's get the show on the road. We're going to do an AFC preview tonight. It's not a favor to Rob, even though he did prefer this conference, maybe because he likes a team from this conference.
Maybe. Just maybe. There's a slight possibility there is a team in this conference that I am particularly fond of.
Yeah.
So
what's it like being a Browns fan these days?
Yeah. One word, no. No. We don't like the Browns. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we kick off this recap of but also preview of the four AFC divisions heading into the 2022 season, starting, unsurprisingly, with my own AFC North. So
I guess I did ignite those flames.
Yes, indeed. It was the perfect segue into exactly what I wanted to start with. Not because I'm biased or anything, but because, you know, the AFC North is obviously the most interesting division in football, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even like I'm not unbiased because I like the Ravens through my friendship with you, but I would say that it makes for the most. Actually, I don't know if it's the most interesting, because I don't see everyone being like a serious competitive threat. I would argue that the AFC West might be more interesting,
yes.
But the whole Deshaun Watson situation makes it such a phenomenon to watch as it's developing in front of us. And there's still, you know, obviously Lamar and Joe Burrow and whoever is capable of throwing a ball in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And for the record, I do agree with you. I was mostly being facetious earlier. I do believe the AFC West is the most interesting division in football. In fact, it might be potentially the most interesting division in football we've ever seen. I saw an unbelievable stat the other day. We'll come back to the North. I saw an unbelievable stat the other day that the four quarterbacks in the AFC West consist of the guy with the highest passer rating in NFL history, the guy with the most yards and touchdowns through his first two seasons in NFL history, the guy with the most wins in the NFL since he entered the league, and also the guy who has the most fourth quarter comebacks since he entered the league. Those are the four quarterbacks in the AFC West, which is honestly unbelievable, you know, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. And those teams are, all of them, maybe to varying degrees, are more than just their quarterbacks. So ultimately, I think it makes for a very exciting team, of course. And we'll save the AFC West for last. But let's do the North first.
Yeah, the AFC North, a division which I may or may not have a special affinity for. You know, it's been a really interesting couple years, I will say, for the AFC North. And you know what I mean by that is, in particular, obviously over the last three seasons, but really over the last season and a half, we've seen a lot of change in that division. You know, it's almost as if the power structure has completely turned upside down, which is really kind of a, you know, interesting thing to wrap your head around. Because, you know, for the longest time you had the Ravens and Steelers, and it was just kind of understood that they were the dominant powerhouses in the division. But literally within the last 2 years, you've had the Bengals come on with a vengeance. You've had the Browns finally start to figure things out with Baker Mayfield before ultimately, you know, deciding that they no longer wanted to figure things out with Baker Mayfield, and they decided to go after Deshaun Watson. And, you know, we all know how that's turned out for them. So, you know, it's really just so interesting to me, you know, just to, you know, think about where the division is now relative to where it was not that long ago. And you know, it almost feels crazy to me that at one point we were looking at the Steelers as the class of this division and the Bengals and Browns as the bottom feeders. I mean, I would argue that the Browns are only viewed as a bottom feeder for this year because they'll be without their starting quarterback for the first 11 games.
But we may also consider them bottom feeders on the scale of morality, but that's another question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. That was a worthy supplement for my take. Bottom feeders on the morality scale, 100%. But that's neither here nor there. The point is, you know, if Deshaun Watson were going to be out there for a full 17-game slate, I'm not sure they're not the favorites in the division. I mean, you know, it seems as though all four teams in the division have very strong rosters. The Steelers is by far the weakest, simply because they just don't have the offensive line nor the offensive firepower that they used to. The defense is unbelievable. But when you look at the Browns, the Ravens, and the Bengals, I mean, they all have rosters that, in my opinion, are capable of winning a Super Bowl. Again, not sure the Browns can realistically look to sniff that this year, given the lengthy suspension of Watson. But, I mean, it's the Ravens and the Bengals division to lose. I truly believe the Bengals are not going to miss a beat this year, as much as it really pains me to say that. I believe they're going to be just as good and that they're going to be in contention for double-digit wins for every remaining season while Joe Burrow is their starting quarterback, because he is just that good. And the roster has been, you know, fortified around him to be just as good as well. And then the Ravens, of course, I mean, they're getting back so many guys from injury. I mean, it's frankly just saddening how many guys they lost for the year last year. Whether you're a fan or not, I mean, you know, if you love football, that was not an NFL roster the Ravens were fielding at the end of last year's season. That was just a collection of guys wearing purple uniforms who were healthy enough to suit up that day. And so I think they're going to be back with a vengeance as well. And then the Steelers, I mean, the Steelers are the most interesting wild card in the division. You know, is Kenny Pickett good? You know, we know he's very pro ready. We know that he has familiarity with that city and that stadium. But, you know, is he the guy who's going to be able to compete in an AFC, which is already so loaded with top tier quarterbacks? I think only time can tell. I'm not as optimistic, and that has nothing to do with my thoughts on the Steelers as a Ravens fan. It's just, you know, my gut feeling is that this division going forward runs through the Bengals and the Ravens, and ultimately the Browns, you know, in future seasons. And the Steelers, I think, are going to have to be playing a bit of catch up from here.
Well, yeah, I think that was a pretty good summary of the entire division at large. I guess we should just focus on a little bit of like the particularities of what each team went through, just like a roster personnel wise. And, you know, the Ravens, as you said before, was mostly getting healthy. That's their roster change. That's like adding 20 guys to their roster.
I mean, honestly, like, that was the biggest move of the offseason for them, was just getting guys back healthy. And, like, you know, running back Gus Edwards, it was just announced today, is going to start the season on the PUP list, so he won't be eligible until week 5. But honestly, I mean, he's really the only guy. I mean, they're getting back Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters, both of whom missed very large chunks, if not all of last season. The plan is for them to get Ronnie Stanley back, although he has not officially stepped back out onto the field. They're all pro left tackle. Running back J.K. Dobbins, their starting running back, has returned to training camp and is practicing, which is a great sign. I mean, other than that, they've been able to stay mostly healthy, you know, with the guys who were already healthy throughout the offseason. They made some incredible changes with their training camp regimen, whereby they simply weren't practicing for as long or as hard. And it really has seemed to work. Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, I just give Harbaugh a ton of credit. You know, he's a guy who's had success in this league, and he was willing to change it up because he saw how his historically brutal training camp regimen, you know, according to the accounts of players, ultimately, I believe, played a very big role in the health of his team and therefore the success of the team last season. And so, you know, kudos to them, you know, fingers crossed that they can keep it up, knock on wood. I think things are looking up for them. As for the Bengals, I mean, they only got better, you know. I mean, outside of Joe Bengals' appendectomy, apparently he had his appendix removed, which sounds awful. Thankfully, he's, you know, recovering from that just fine and back at practice. The Bengals picked up 3 offensive linemen, and in my opinion, they picked up 3 very good offensive linemen. So we all know that was the weakness of their team last season when they, you know, were in the Super Bowl. So I have to think that, you know, by shoring up arguably the only weakness they had, although I do believe their linebacking play is a bit suspect, I have to think that by shoring up their primary weakness on the offensive line, that they will enjoy similar success this year, if not potentially a little bit more or a little bit less success. They, you know, obviously they're now the hunted. They're going up against a first place schedule, so that's something to consider. But I still like the Bengals this year. And then we all know the deal with Cleveland. I mean, you know, they lost Deshaun Watson for, you know, the first 11 games of the year, which is really unfortunate for them. Nothing else really matters, you know, truth be told. Nothing else they did really matters if he's not out there. And then the Steelers, of course, you know, they picked up a great wide receiver in the draft to go along with Kenny Pickett and George Pickens. I mean, George Pickens already looks like he has the potential to become the next great Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver. It's something about their scouting, coaching, developing program for wide receivers, but Pittsburgh has just figured it out. And it now appears as if they have another one in the long line of successes at that position. He's looked great in the preseason, as has Pickett. Honestly, Pickett has looked good. You know, I can't take that away from him. And so, you know, I think unfortunately for them, the division runs through the other three. And I just don't know if in this division that the firepower they have is going to be enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair. I do think that the Steelers are a ways away. I mean, they are essentially rebuilding, you know? You had Roethlisberger for the longest time, and now you don't. You have to change your franchise. You have to change this timeline. There's a lot of things that go into that. And as much as they might be a thorn in your side of the past, history probably shows that they'll work their way back into the mix just soon enough. For a few years, probably, you get to not really worry as much about them, which I suppose could be all the relief you as a Ravens fan need.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair way of putting it. You know, they will, at least when we directly face off against them, they will continue to be a thorn in our side, even now. You know, the Steelers and Mike Tomlin's coaching staff have always played the Ravens extraordinarily well. All of the games are close. It's exceedingly rare that there is a blowout in either direction. It's just the amount of understanding and respect and experience the coaching staffs have for one another when facing off. Historically, that's just the way it's played out. Honestly, if I'm the Steelers, I'm starting Kenny Pickett week one, because you may never have a better opportunity to figure out what you've got than this year. I mean, again, you've got Deshaun, who is not going to be playing for the first 11 games. So the Browns are effectively a non-factor in this year's division race. Again, you know, Kenny Pickett was a four-year starter. He's played in that stadium, right? I mean, he knows the surroundings. He knows the locker room like the back of his hand already. He's got an unbelievable set of advantages going in that a lot of rookie quarterbacks simply don't have. And this is arguably the easiest the division is going to be for the foreseeable future. So, I mean, with how good he's looked in preseason and with how supposedly pro-ready he is, I just don't see why they wouldn't, you know, see what they've got beginning in week one. Because if you determine that he's not what you thought he was or what you hoped he would become, then worst case scenario, you draft another quarterback next year and you move on, you know?
Or you rely on the GOAT, Mitchell Trubisky, to carry your team to the Super Bowl.
Or you do that. Yes, that is always an option that is in your arsenal.
I mean, I just think that the only real concern of ever bringing out a rookie QB is their health. If you don't have the O-line ready, you don't want to waste your franchise's potential. So the question is the Pittsburgh Steelers O-line ready to protect their QB? And maybe is the answer to that, I'd say. I'd say maybe. Yeah. It's definitely better than what the Bears did with Justin Fields just a year ago. But is it enough? I mean, maybe it's enough because Joe Burrow had far worse protection when he joined the league. But you never know. The O-line is really important, and QBs, you just don't want to – you want to ruin their careers early. So I understand why teams take it tepid, especially if they're not going to do well regardless.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, you know, I would be careful about comparing Joe Burrow to Kenny Pickett.
I think there's Pickett's just like way better. It's fine. I shouldn't be comparing them.
Obviously, what I was trying to say. I just think Joe Burrow is a special breed of cat. No pun intended. Because he is a Cincinnati Bengal. I just think he's a very
I just need to say it. I'm literally going to a tiger reserve in India in the next day or two. So maybe I find an actual Bengal for us. I'll let you know.
Maybe, yes. Yes, you should bring it back, and then he can be the mascot of Hitch Route.
Yeah, I have to ask pretty nicely. Tigers are known for being ferocious.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. I have to wonder how you will be able to fit this new mascot of ours on the plane coming back home. But
anyway. Considering I couldn't even bring my dog to India, you know, that's kind of a whole ordeal as is. An actual tiger. I miss Quaker, man. I miss Quaker. But he's being well taken care of. That's all that matters.
Indeed. Indeed. So, you know, getting back to the, you know, Bengals and Steelers. I mean, Joe Burrow, I feel, was uniquely equipped to handle that. And even then, I still believe the Bengals were unimaginably fortunate to make it all the way to the Super Bowl with that offensive line. I mean, I don't think that's that hot of a take. I really don't. I mean, we all watch their games, not just throughout the regular season, but throughout the postseason.
I mean, we all have eyes.
We all have eyes. I mean, we all saw him take an incredible beating despite his heroics, right? I mean, even in victory, he was getting sacked 5 to 6 times per game, it seemed like, for long stretches. And, you know, it's a really good thing that they attacked it during the offseason, because I just don't believe they were going to be able to replicate that success with the offensive line they had. And to your point, Alex, given the Steelers' own offensive line woes, that is the one thing that could potentially derail my picket theory with respect to them, you know, I believe being best positioned to start him as opposed to sitting him on the bench. But time will tell. All in all, I think this is one of the more interesting divisions in football, if not the most interesting, one of the more interesting ones for sure.
Interesting.
Very.
We need a better vocabulary, man. Intriguing. We can throw in a few
thought
provokings. Scintillating. There we go.
Scintillating. Yes.
This is the most.
It may not be the most scintillating division, but it is one of the more scintillating ones.
I would say that the AFC West is the most scintillating division, but the AFC North is the most intriguing division.
Well, then which division is the most sizzling, I wonder?
You've got me there. I have no idea which division is the most sizzling. Maybe the Texas one, just because steak.
Speaking of the Texas one, shall we move on to the AFC South?
I suppose so. There's a lot of sunlight there, so maybe they are the most sizzling division.
Yes. The AFC South. What a boring division. Moving on to the AFC East.
I would say that's more true than the AFC South would like to admit. But you still have Trevor Lawrence and the Jags. You have the Colts with Jonathan Taylor. And I honestly think Matt Ryan is going to do really well in that system. That's a major change. The Colts, you know, had their whole Carson Wentz moment and quickly realized that, no. We're not putting up with this any longer. The Houston Texans gave away Deshaun Watson so that they can develop thick neck Mills, presumably.
Yes. Thank you for that beautiful synopsis, which inexplicably excluded the Titans.
They are supposedly good team there. And the QB situation is less meme-worthy, I'd say. So it didn't really make the queue naturally. That said, they are interesting because, Tannehill played really well. But what's it going to be like? Now they don't have A.J. Brown. Now they don't have Julio Jones, who's a Buccaneer. They are kind of starting over, except they have Derrick Henry. And I don't know if that's what a team should be doing, but that's what they are doing.
I agree with almost everything you've said. I do think it's interesting. You know, this is one interesting thing about this division is that, you know, there does seem to be this consensus around it being a two-horse race at the top, and then there's sort of this gap between the top two and the bottom two. But of course, that bottom two honestly leaves more question marks than you know, certainties. I'm going to slightly disagree with you on the Titans. I don't know how much per se they are starting over, so much as they're going to have to figure out their passing offense without AJ Brown, right? I mean, like, it still runs through Derrick Henry. We all know that. Ryan Tannehill is not going to become magical this season, right? I mean, like, he is what he is. And on his best days, he can be quite good. I mean, I think. But, you know, it's still going to depend on how well that line can block for Henry. And, of course, how well Tannehill can perform off of the play action, which historically is actually one of his strengths. He's one of the better play action quarterbacks in the league. So they do still have that going for them. But you're right. I mean, the loss of A.J. Brown, I don't know how much credence I give the loss of Julio Jones. I believe he was kind of a damaged asset going into last season. He's nowhere near, you know, what he was in the prime of his career. Not saying he still can't contribute, but I don't know if he was really as much of a force for them as he was in Atlanta, even at the end in Atlanta. But honestly, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, over on the Colts side of things, I've got to be honest, I still don't quite understand why they released Carson Wentz. I mean, he threw 27 touchdowns to only, I think it was five to seven interceptions, something like that, which obviously we all know how it ended, which was awful. But, like, you know, you're telling me that was all his fault? Like, it wasn't a team loss, especially when the team has never beaten Jacksonville in Jacksonville in the last seven seasons, which is remarkable in itself. They have not beaten Jacksonville in Jacksonville for the last seven or eight seasons. I don't know how that's possible, but it's clearly a matchup problem. Clearly that coaching staff knows the Colts schemes way too well. And again, that's Carson Wentz's fault? I just didn't quite get that. I mean, I still don't understand why they let him go. And it seemed like at the time they let him go, they did not have the Matt Ryan contingency plan lined up. He kind of just fell into their lap. And so in that regard, like, they kind of lucked out. So I don't know. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
I mean, I think I don't really blame them. If the Colts, I think, have historically been a team that in the past several years, it feels like if they think that a situation isn't going to work out, they shut it down early. They aren't a team that cares too much about delving into, like, making Wentz better and figuring out whether if they just quickly decide he's not for us or he is for us. I feel like there was kind of a similar situation with, like, Marlon Mack. They quickly figured out he's, like, not really the thing, and then they stopped playing him, even though he was there. And then, you know, the QB, you don't just hold on to Carson Wentz if you don't really plan on wanting him to be part of your long-term picture. They did give up a lot to get him. Maybe not too much, but they definitely gave up more than they got back when they sent him to Washington. So it's always interesting when a team does that. And then they probably used a similar degree of capital to get Matt Ryan. Yeah, maybe they did luck out. I think that Matt Ryan being on the move had felt like it was in the cards for a while. But yeah, they didn't have anything set up before doing it. So it definitely wasn't the best planning endeavor in the history of the NFL. I do think, though, at the end of the day, that even if we don't like the process, we can look at the result. And I like the current Colts structure. I like Matt Ryan with a great O-line. We know what he did in 2016, and I know that's a very long time away, but he has still been a good QB the entire time. It's just that Atlanta had moved past what it was. So with the Colts, he'll be reinvigorated. Michael Pittman Jr. is is a young stud. He's not like Jamar Chase, but he's still a really good wide receiver. And they had a good draft. And they have Jonathan Taylor, who is arguably the number one running back in football now. So, you know, I think they have a lot of things going for them. And it's much closer than it was a year ago between the two top horses in this division. I think that I was probably a bit harsh on starting over, but it's more that, you know, you give up A.J. Brown for a receiver that could become A.J. Brown. I'm just not a fan of that process because they didn't want to pay him, what, $25 million? Like, it's really not that much at the end of the day for a guy like AJB. But I do like the Robert Woods signing a lot. He's definitely better than Julio Jones was last year. So it's not a starting over. And I don't know how parallel the schemes are from the last office to this one. So I don't know how quickly Woods integrates into the system. But yeah, I'm not like too worried about them and their defense. Their front seven was menacing, and it still is menacing. So all the pieces are mostly there, but the passing game will change. So that's a major. I thought that is a major element in like an NFL offense, but it's not even the majority of the offense in Tennessee. So you're right that was a bit much for me to say.
I agree with your assessment of the Colts 100%. I mean, I think they have amassed one of the better rosters in football over the last several seasons. I think Chris Ballard is an exceptional GM, potentially one of the best GMs in all of football. And yes, I completely agree with you. I believe the infrastructure in Atlanta was actually holding Matt Ryan back at the end. And while I might not understand why they departed from Carson Wentz, I do believe that Matt Ryan was a good decision to replace him, right? You know, like, I don't have to like the original move, but I can like the solution to the original move. And that's kind of the camp I'm in. I do believe that, you know, just as you said, the gap between the two of them has closed. Tennessee has likely pulled back a bit, while the Colts have obviously ascended a bit, you know, during this most recently ended offseason. So it'll be interesting. And like, you know, you kind of alluded to this earlier, but I think the Jags could make some noise. Maybe not playoff noise, but I think they could start to come on, especially toward the end of the year. I'm a big believer in Doug Peterson. We're all big believers, I think, in Trevor Lawrence and just the sheer talent he possesses as a prospect. You know, he's got the year two bounce going for him, which just about every quarterback now, it seems, exhibits the year two bounce.
Please, Justin Fields, please listen to this podcast.
Yes, please, Justin Fields. If you don't listen to Hitch Route, please, whatever you're doing, I know it's not Call of Duty because that's Kyler's thing. But whatever you're doing, just, you know, stop what you're doing and you know, tune into Hitch Route, because
I more meant the message and not the actual episode. But fair enough. I would like it if Justin Fields listened to my podcast personally.
Indeed. That would actually be pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. That would be really, really quite something. Yeah. I mean, I think I've said my piece on the Jags. It's one of those things where, you know, the ship could really start to sail, or the ship could like not leave port. And I tend to be in the camp that I believe the ship will start to take sail as we go throughout the season, and as that coaching staff sort of has a chance to gel with what is still a very young roster when you look at it. You know, a young roster that's not as experienced, but which I think has tremendous potential.
Well said. I mean, yeah, they have pretty good offensive skill personnel. One of my favorites, DJ Chark, is gone, though. But they also signed Christian Kirk to an incredibly sizable deal that, you know, was not worth Christian Kirk, in my opinion. But the finances doesn't matter too much, because it's just about what players are on the field at the end of the day. Jacksonville has a long way to go. And honestly, the Texans have done some interesting things too. I'm not going to really delve into it, but Davis Mills definitely had flashes, plenty of them last year. Still feel immense pain, not pain, but like a shock from them beating the Chargers so close to the end of the season. They drafted some really good defensive players. They also now have Dameon Pierce, who could be their new starting running back. I mean, things are looking up in Houston, and man, it's weird to say that Lovie Smith is a coach in the NFL again.
Yes. Coach Lovie, what a guy.
He almost won us a Super Bowl. I'll love him for that.
Yes. Yes. Gotta love Lovie. But yes, I think, I'm going to be real honest with you. I have no idea what to make of the Texans. I have next to no idea of what to make of them. I mean, it really all depends on Davis Mills. I mean, is Davis Mills the guy, or is he just a guy? You know, like, if he's the guy, then maybe they win some games and they like start the climb out of the cellar. But for right now, at least, he's just a guy. And I feel like if you just have a guy as opposed to the guy, those are the kinds of teams that remain in the cellar and don't climb out.
Man, if only they had some really good quarterback like Deshaun Watson, you know, maybe their franchise could be pretty different.
Yes, and if only that quarterback, such as Deshaun Watson, actually had any interest in playing a snap for the Houston Texans.
I suppose that is part of it as well.
Indeed. You know, as the old saying goes, you can lead a Deshaun Watson to the football field, but you can't get him to take a snap.
Yes, they've been saying this ever since I was a youngin.
Indeed, they've been saying it actually for thousands of years.
Nostradamus was really lit on that one. He just knew that what was going to happen.
He had a vision.
He had a dream, one might say.
Indeed. So, well, shall we move to the AFC?
Yes, please, please.
I think we have spent more time on the AFC South than every talk show combined this offseason.
The bottom two, maybe. Anyways, AFC East. Bills Mafia. Oh, did I mention Bills Mafia?
Perfect. On to the West.
This team just looks better. You know, they drafted with, yeah. They now have Dalvin Cook's little brother. You know, I mean, like, that's a name's a name, but they drafted well. I forget who their new cornerback they drafted, but he looks like a really good prospect that will line up well next to Tre'Davious White, who is back after a season-ending injury. Or if he's not, I don't know if he's back in training camp, but he's definitely going to be back for the season at some point. And Joshua Allen is, in fact, Joshua Allen. I mean, they were – I had picked them to win the Super Bowl last year, and if it wasn't for a coin flip, maybe they would have.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, it's all right there for the Bills. You know, they just have to go take it. And I think the most interesting storyline for them this year is how good does the offense and or Josh Allen look without Brian Daboll? Either they won't miss a beat or it'll take them a while to really get some, you know, momentum. And fortunately, they're in a division where if it does take a little while for them to gain some momentum, it probably won't matter, because I think they're easily winning that division, even if they start slow. I mean, sure, you know, the Jets
are... Are you dismissing the New York Jets? I'm just going to stop you right there. You're dismissing the New York Jets.
It's funny because you clearly had that thought formed in your mind before I even uttered the word Jets. So you knew exactly where I was going before I even went there. Kudos to you. That is a rare talent you have. I don't know, man. I mean, they had a great draft. They've had a couple of great drafts, honestly. Like the Jets, they've really, really gotten it together on the personnel side the last couple of seasons. The problem is they just haven't been able to keep these guys healthy. I mean, Mekhi Becton, geez, what an awful, awful break. You know, Zach Wilson going down, and it appears as though he's not going to be ready for week one, and who knows how long it'll take for him to be ready. I mean,
I hope you own Joe Flacco on Precision Strike.
Yes. I don't recall Prediction Strike being a sponsor of Hitch Route, but sure, we'll give them a shameless plug anyhow.
It's basically stonks, but football. You guys can look into it. We make literally no money out of this. We just think it's an interesting idea.
Indeed. So, I mean, you know, good for Joe. I'm sorry I'll have to root against him in week one when he faces off against his former team. But, you know, such is the way that the football bounces sometimes. But, you know, I just think the Jets are like another year or two away from realistically having a shot at competing with Buffalo. I mean, again, in any other division, I would like the Jets as a second or third place finisher. I really would. But, I mean, against Buffalo, against Bill Belichick, I mean, I actually think on a neutral field, they could be pretty competitive with the Dolphins, even though I think highly of the Dolphins. You know, I just think that as long as the Bills and the Patriots are standing in their way, they just have a lot longer to go. That's all.
Yeah, fair enough. It's tough. All we know, though, is that Zach Wilson has that dog in him. So hopefully he'll be able to come together and keep growing as a player, perhaps as a person, too. I'm not sure how much growth he needs there.
If you don't know what we're referring to when we say he has that dog in him, then A, you need to be following the NFL offseason more closely. And B, in particular, you need to be following that particular storyline more closely than you are right now. But anyhow, you were saying?
I was just saying that, yeah, I mean, they need time to grow. But it's much better than the Jets could have ever seen themselves probably for years. Like, this is probably the most optimistic their franchise has been since they went to the AFC Championships.
Oh, absolutely. And I think their optimism is justified. I think they are moving in the right direction, unquestionably. I think Joe Douglas is an excellent GM. I think, you know, again, I think the roster is coming. I think the roster is coming, you know, into form. I just think that they're another season or two away. That's all.
And that's fine. Maybe by then the Patriots are finally done with it. Belichick is like, you know, I mean, I don't see him like as a throw in the towel kind of guy, but he just might be tired of being behind the Bills. And I don't see the Patriots doing anything to usurp them, even if Mac Jones develops very well.
I'm with you. I mean, I'm with you 100%. I don't know if Mac Jones realistically has another gear to compete against Josh Allen. I mean, again, I'm sure that in year two, he will take a jump, as most quarterbacks do in year two. But I don't know if Mac Jones's ceiling is anywhere close to Josh Allen's. And as long as that is the case, I think if you're the Patriots, you're looking at a wild card spot. You know, I mean, obviously, things always happen. It's football. Josh Allen could get hurt. He could miss some extended time. And then you might potentially have a window there. But do you really want to rely on that? And if you're Belichick, you know, with all of the success you've had with Tom before, you know, you have to wonder how much patience he's going to have for it after a while. Does he decide to go to a different franchise? Does he decide to call it a career? I could honestly see him doing either one, but I don't think he's going to wait around for the next 9 or 10 years, you know, to see if Mac Jones is, if we're going to wake up one day and Mac Jones is going to be on the same kind of playing field as Josh Allen, because I don't see it. And I just don't think, I think either you have it or you don't. And I think we can all agree that Mac Jones's ceiling is far more limited.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, coming into this offseason, like not this offseason, last year when the NFL draft, I wasn't pretty high on Zach Wilson. I honestly thought, you know, that was a reach of a pick for sure. I figured, you know, Mac Jones was even being talked about at three. It was an interesting QB class, and now I think it's been clearly established that at least the relative draft order between the two of them was justified, because Zach Wilson has definitely grown a lot, and we see a pretty good potential in him. I think Mac maybe can be, I mean, he did so well his rookie year that in a way that is very assuring, but in a way it's also a concern. It's like, this is like a pro, like he's already tapped into what he has. Whereas like, you know, the Bears took Justin Fields because we think he has a sky high ceiling. And I think generally that's the route to go with quarterback. You go for their ceiling, not for where there will be in the next few years. But it's interesting to say the least. And I don't see Belichick leaving and going to a different team, because I don't think any other franchise is going to give him like the executive authority that Robert Kraft has given him.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly possible. It's something that's hard for us to really think about, especially given his unbelievable track record in New England right up until, you know, two seasons ago.
Losing the greatest QB of all time definitely hurts your team.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, it's pretty remarkable, I think, just how, you know, just how leveraged their success was disproportionately, I think, to Brady relative to him. You know, I think we all had this tendency to assume that without Belichick, Brady would not have all the Super Bowls. And maybe he wouldn't, right? Maybe with any other coach, he would not. Both can be true. But I think there were many who were assigning 60 to 70% of the credit to Belichick, when in reality, it looks as though 60 to 70% of that credit should probably have been going to Brady all that time.
Yeah, I think I was not firmly in that camp, but I definitely leaned towards that camp. And I've certainly held my breath on that and bit my tongue. Majority clearly belongs to Brady at this point, I'd say. But, you know, we don't know what Mac Jones will be. Maybe, I mean, we weren't saying this about Brady after 1 year in the league, you know? So we really don't know. I think the Patriots did really well considering their roster. And they'll likely continue chugging along because it's the Patriot way. The only other team that we haven't really talked about, you and I both find very interesting, is the Dolphins. I really like the old look of this team, like back when they had Flores and back when they were just like grinding it out. But now they've made some really flashy moves to get Tyreek Hill, you know, having arguably the best wide receiver in the league, but maybe not the best. That's subjective, but the fastest elite quarterback for sure. Fastest elite wide receiver for sure is definitely interesting development, and it can take their franchise to a whole new level if Tua can actually pass it to him.
Yes. Tua. Yes, it's going to be an interesting experiment for sure. I mean, Now, there is sort of this misconception out there, I think, that, you know, the primary featured role of Tyreek Hill in this offense is going to be Tua trying to heave it downfield to him unsuccessfully, which, I mean, we'll honestly probably see some of that if we're being realistic, right? But, like, at the same time, I'm pretty sure there's some stat whereby almost 80% of Tyreek Hill's yards came, like, from a combination of jet sweeps and like dump offs into the flat or something, which, you know, we know Tua can do that. So like, it's not like, you know, Tyreek Hill is going to be completely ineffective in this new offense with this new quarterback. I think the Dolphins are going to find themselves in this interesting dilemma after this season. And that dilemma is going to be Tua actually, by all accounts, had a pretty good year. He, you know, threw for a lot of touchdowns, not very many interceptions. He won a lot of games thanks to his unbelievable supporting cast of, you know, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, Mike Gesicki, and, you know, all of their other offensive talent around them.
Yeah, they're 10 starting caliber running backs.
Yes, and they're 10 starting caliber running backs. So, like, you know, I do think the coaching staff is going to find themselves in this interesting pickle after this year, and that Tua is going to do well, and they're going to have to, like, really ask themselves, you know, is this Tua? Is this just the roster we've built around him? You know, what do we do here? Because I'm still kind of on the fence about Tua. You know, I'd like to believe that you know, he is the guy, but I'm not sure I'm fully convinced yet. I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm not convinced either. I want him to be the guy. I want it to work out. This is very much a make or break year for him. I think if they get up, if they end the season with the dilemma that you've presented, that he looks good on all accounts, even if we're like, is it really because of him? I think they keep going with Tua. I don't see them turning away just because it's like, oh, it's a supporting cast thing. Yeah, okay, fine. Teams are a team. You know, it doesn't all have to be Tua. And why risk the chemistry if it works? If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to have a choice because, I mean, like, we all know this league runs through quarterback. And regardless of how intrinsically talented or not your quarterback may be, if it's working, why are you going to disrupt that, right? Now, of course, you know, what does that mean? Does that mean that they, after his third season, which will be this coming season, does that mean after this coming season they look to extend him? Does it mean that they let his deal play out, they pick up his fifth-year option, and then just see where it goes from there? You know, the nice thing if you're the Dolphins is you do have that flexibility. In that if you're not quite sold after this year, even if he does ball out, you technically don't have to pay him. Naturally, he could demand a trade, he could hold out, but, you know, both of which I suppose are on the table for any quarterback. But, you know,
even Lamar Jackson.
That is a different situation entirely, and I think we all know it. And it's probably an issue to discuss on a different podcast.
Fair enough.
But I mean, you know, the Dolphins, I think, you know, I think they should be mindful that this is coming. Or at least they should be mindful of the possibility that this could be coming. And I wouldn't be surprised if they already are.
Yeah, fair enough. Overall, I think the AFC East has a pretty clear top dog, and all three of the other teams, you know, have some worth to them. So it's interesting.
I think that's a good way of putting it. They're all interesting, you know, like none of them can be counted out, but they're all just kind of interesting, not scintillating, but interesting.
Yeah. Speaking of scintillating, though, let us finally dive into the AFC West. We honestly probably cannot give the amount of time that is due to it tonight, but in a sense, maybe we don't need that much time because it's like, wow, look at one great roster. Oh, wow, look at another great roster. We just have four great rosters here, you know? What do we do about it, you know? It's really tough for us to, like, pick a winner. I have one in mind, but it's a lot more complicated.
Yeah. This is, I think, I do not think it's a stretch to say that we are looking at the best division or one of the best divisions in the history of football. Honestly, I think on paper it could be the very best. I think, you know, I do not think it's unreasonable at all. You know, if you told me that all four of them would make the playoffs this coming season, I would not be shocked at all. I mean, and if that's not a testament to just the sheer strength of all four teams, I don't know what is. They all got better. I mean, they arguably all got better this offseason. We can debate the Chiefs losing Tyreek Hill, but they did get Sky Moore in the draft, who's expected to be a very productive young wide receiver who can step in to at least, you know, attempt to fill those shoes. All accounts are that Patrick Mahomes has had a very good offseason. He's been unbelievably dialed in. And they've accordingly looked unbelievable in preseason, at least while the starters have been out there. We all know the Chargers have improved, particularly on defense. They've gotten, you know, some great help, you know, on their, you know, running defensive front. You know, they just extended Derwin James, which is an excellent move by them.
They signed J.C. Jackson.
They signed J.C. Jackson, thank you. You know, an unbelievable corner who I, to this day, can't believe New England let walk out of their building. But they did.
I think it was because of the one game 2 years ago when he let Stephon Diggs score three touchdowns on his own. Remember that fateful day? Remember that fateful day, Rob?
Yes. In fact, for all the listeners out there, Alex and I remember this fateful day for a very, very infamous reason, in that had Stephon Diggs literally caught not three, but two touchdowns, we would have won our fantasy league that year. Yes, because Stephon Diggs had to go off and score three touchdowns in a single game of football. Had he only scored two, we would have won our league. But no, he had to score three.
He had not even had a single game with two touchdowns that season.
Yes. Yes. The man had to literally score three touchdowns in order for us to lose our league.
We were facing exactly a team with both Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs.
Yes. So we literally got doubly screwed every time that they scored a passing touchdown to Stephon Diggs.
If they scored a total of 65 points, we would have been okay. And that's a lot of points. 65 points with your QB and receiver combined, we would have been fine. But 70 was too much for us.
If they had simply taken Josh Allen out of the game and put in Mitchell Trubisky and had Mitchell Trubisky thrown Stephon Diggs' third touchdown pass.
He wasn't on the team then, but point taken.
He wasn't?
No, we still had Mitch then.
Oh, that's right. That's right. This was a couple of years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
But again, my point still stands. Had they had not let Josh Allen needlessly pad his stats and just taken him out of the game and inserted the backup into his place, and the backup had been the author of that third touchdown pass, we would have won our league.
Yeah. That's fun.
But alas, it was not in the cards. So, back to the AFC West, the greatest division in the history of football.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's a cool thing to talk about.
Yes. Yes. I'm just so excited for this division, man. I mean, so we covered the Chargers. We covered the Chiefs. The Broncos, I mean, need I go into how the Broncos got better? I mean, talk about just completely changing the fortunes of your franchise overnight.
It's not even acquiring Russell Wilson that made them good. It's getting rid of Drew Lock that made them an elite franchise.
Yes. Yes, getting rid of Drew Lock was what put you guys on the map. But acquiring Russell Wilson was just the icing on the cake.
The cherry on top, yeah. If you will.
Yes, yes, definitely how that went down. I don't know what all of these, you know, anonymous NFL scouts and coaches and executives are thinking in putting Russell Wilson into the tier two category. But like, come on, guys. I mean, like, what are we doing? Like, if you don't believe Russell Wilson by now at this point in his career is a undeniably tier one quarterback, I can't help you. I mean,
well, how many tiers are there? How many tiers are there, Robbie? I mean, like, how many people are in that tier? You know, like, it's kind of subjective. He's not the cream of the crop.
Well, so like my counter to that would be the tiers as defined by the Athletics Annual Survey are very, very specifically defined. And tier one, in fact, I don't have the article up in front of me, but basically, to paraphrase the definition of tier one, it's a quarterback who can carry his team most weeks during pure passing situations. And like, I'm sorry, but we've seen Russell Wilson do that time and time again with a very, in my opinion, inferior Seattle roster, especially toward the end of his time in Seattle. And so like, you know, I see stuff like that and I just shake my head and I'm like, really? You know, like if you can't appreciate what this guy has done for what, in all honesty, has been a flailing franchise in Seattle for the past 2 to 3 seasons. I mean, he has kept them afloat. He has made them relevant. Without him, they, and you know what? We're going to see it this year because he's not going to be there. We're going to see what they are without him. And without him, in my opinion, they are the dregs of the NFL. I mean, the dregs. They might have the first overall pick next year.
The Bears beat them in a preseason game. I think that's really all we need to say out there. We beat them 17-0 in the first half.
Beautiful.
They muffed a fair catch, and we scored a special teams touchdown, you know, in preseason. You know, that's not the inklings to show that your franchise is a good one, to say the least. But they have interesting passing options with Metcalf and Lockett and now Noah Fant. And they actually have, I mean, Rashad Penny and Kenneth Walker. You know, they have the offensive skill personnel. It's just a QB, which I guess is an important position, and the entirety of a defense. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, you're right. To Denver, the team in which Danger Russ currently plays.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Denver is very well equipped to succeed now. They have a lot of good talent on both sides of the ball. Defense has been underappreciated probably because of the lack of offensive prowess, so the team is just looked at negatively overall. And I think, you know, they made good moves also with the Von Miller deal earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, this franchise has some pretty good direction as to what it was doing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Denver is well run. I mean, you know, obviously the question remains, you know, what will the new ownership group bring? One of the more interesting offseason storylines that we don't really see as often, you know, in that, you know, a team goes up for sale and a new ownership group comes in. That's pretty interesting, honestly. And I don't think it should be underestimated. You know, just the impact that a changing of the guard at the ownership level can have for an NFL franchise. I mean, we've seen it. We saw it with Buffalo. They have completely turned around, you know, that franchise with the new owner stepping in, the Pagliucas, I believe it is. you know, the Bills, they were a joke, but then they got a new ownership group and now they're the class of the league. You know, will Denver follow a similar path? Will they go in the opposite direction? Personally, I don't think it matters because they've got Russell Wilson, but you know, it is kind of interesting. You know, how that whole dynamic might play out. And then you have the Raiders, who by
them
all accounts,
Raiders.
They got Davante Adams. They picked up, was it Chandler Jones?
Yeah. Chandler Jones next to Max Crosby.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just think about what a nightmare that's going to be for opposing AFC West quarterbacks. I mean, everyone in the division arguably got better. Again, you can argue either way for the Chiefs, but as long as they have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, I'm sorry, but they should be the favorites to win that division. You know, until it is demonstrated otherwise, I believe they're in the driver's seat. And then the other three are just really good, and they all got a lot better.
Fair enough. I honestly think Chargers are the number one team.
I do too. They're my number one team also.
It's interesting, though, because we just established that, you know, the Chiefs are in the driver's seat, but both of us are still veering away from that idea.
Yeah, I mean, I do think one thing the Chiefs have working against them is that they've literally won the division every year since Peyton Manning retired. So, like, you know, at some point your luck does run out, you know? You know, I don't exactly, you know, sports bet, but there's an old, you know, adage in sports betting that, you know, a team isn't going to go out and be amazing like 8 weeks in a row or like whatever the you know, magic number is, right? I would apply that same logic to winning your division. If you manage to win your division 7 years in a row, I do think at some point it's going to be hard for you to keep that streak going simply because everyone around you is probably getting better because you're beating them all the time. And so they're getting better picks. They probably have more cap space with which to work. And I think we're going to see that come to fruition this year. I'm with you. I think the Chargers got robbed last year. I think they were by far the best team to miss the playoffs, and who should have made the playoffs by far.
I mean, that's on them for losing to the Houston Texans. That's on them. There's a lot of, I mean, and like, you know, obviously if it could have been a friendly ending with Chargers Raiders, they could have both gone to the playoffs if they just agreed to kneel it out.
And the Chargers could have solely gone to the playoffs had Brandon Staley not gone for it on his 18-yard line in the first quarter. But, you know, that's not
a lot of things can happen. A lot of things happen.
Yes. Yes. The point is, the Chargers got robbed. They were so much better, in my opinion, than the ending of their season reflected. And now they've just, you know, spat in the face of last year's team and gone out and shored up their defense to a considerable degree.
Khalil Mack is on that defense now, ladies and gents.
How could I forget Khalil Mack? I mean, yes. Unbelievable pickup. Everything they did this offseason was right. Everything the Chargers did this offseason was the right thing to do. And I think they're going to, I agree with you. I think they're going to take the crown away from the Chiefs. But I can understand why the Chiefs are regarded as the unspoken favorites, you know, until further notice. So.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair. And no matter what, it's an exciting division, scintillating, as one might say. And, it'll be a heck of some great football. I don't think four teams. It could happen. If any division could do it, like in history of the NFL, it would be this one. But that's just still such a daunting task because they all face each other six times during the season. So they have that going against them. And, I mean, literally, if there's just one second place division team, like, say, the Ravens, if they were one of the Ravens and the Bengals, if both of those, if two teams make it from any other division, then there can't be four coming out of the AFC West. And I think the AFC North is pretty well equipped to be the reason that four teams don't make it into the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, every AFC West game this year is going to be prime time worthy. I mean, you know, assuming the quarterbacks are healthy. I haven't looked at the full schedule of primetime games, but I would not be surprised if there were at least I wouldn't be surprised if there were at least five or six AFC West matchups on there right now. Because, I mean, every combination of those four teams is going to be a game that everyone wants to see if you love football. I know I'm most excited for that division. I'm more excited for that division than I am for mine. And I think mine is, like, pretty good. But it's not AFC West good.
And I promise I'm far more excited about the AFC West than my own division. By leaps and bounds.
Well. No comment. I will just leave it at that. The Bears' time will come.
Yes, but even like the Bears aside, I just don't think the division is very interesting any longer. And we will get into that in our next episode.
We will.
And with that, I think that's really about it for our AFC wrap-up. Man, it's a great conference. Lots of fun teams there. We know for sure that there are teams that could be in the playoffs, should not are not going to make it. And we've seen this for the past few years with the AFC. When it was like 2 years ago, 11 teams that were still in contention for it, depending on the outcome of their last game. It's just been a very competitive bunch. And the NFC is definitely the weaker conference of late. And it's largely the quarterback situation. Most of the young stud QBs are in the AFC.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we've ever seen a collection of quarterbacks in a single conference as impressive as this current one. And it's both a lot of fun and simultaneously very unfortunate if you root for an AFC team, because you know your road is that much more difficult, but at the same time, you're going to be able to watch your team go up against so many more dynamic young guys. And, you know, as someone who I think has really grown to love the game, per se, more than just their individual team, although I shouldn't say that. I love my team more than the game, but, you know, as someone who has come to love the game so much more over time, I'm personally very excited for this AFC over the next several years. I think it's going to give us some unforgettable moments like the ones that we saw in last year's playoffs, but also during the regular season, such as between the Chargers and the Raiders in that last game, what a showdown that was. Or when the Ravens faced off against the Chiefs in week two of last year, and what a great game that was as well. When the Bengals and Chiefs faced off, that was an unbelievable game, both during the playoffs and in the regular season. I just think it's the conference of the future, and I'm just super excited.
Yeah, I think that's really all there is to say on this one. I think that's it for Hitchrout. It was great having you, Rob, and we'll look forward to diving into the NFC next time.
Totally, and it's great to be back with you, Alex. It's great to, you know, be back for you, all of our listeners, after a long but you know exciting off season, and now we can, you know, start to get into the good stuff once again, now that September is right around the corner. So stay safe, stay cool, and get ready for more football. It's coming.
Peace out.